You're listening to episode 361 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vinterhoff back in Fort Washington, Pennsylvania. Home this tonight for once, Max. How are you?
Good. Well, yeah, sort of good. I tweaked my back, so, you know, that's what happens to old people. But we just, you know, power through it.
Gotta use all those abdominal muscles when you're shoveling all that snow that we've had over the last couple of days. I think we've all forgotten that last year we had COVID, but no snow. I think we've all forgotten how to shovel correctly.
I think you're right.
But we got a lot of good stories tonight. Urban airports, UTM transparency from the FAA, a new transportation secretary, drones that self-monitor airworthiness, domestic actions against Chinese drones, and a Super Bowl no-fly zone. So I guess we should get started. What do you think?
Let's get started, David.
Our first story comes from DroneLife.com. Hyundai passenger drones need urban infrastructure. Urban airport, Air One, is the eVTOL operation hub. At CES in 2020, Hyundai and Uber announced a partnership for drone taxis and urban air mobility. But with all of that, you know, with the aircraft, you need the infrastructure to go with it.
You do. And particularly in this concept that Hyundai and Uber talked about, that infrastructure is a significant part of it. In their proposal, and again, this is a year ago, they talked about a sort of three elements to the system. One is a drone, a multi-prop drone. One is a land-based transport vehicle. And the third is a hub with a landing pad on top in commercial real estate space below. So that's a really interesting concept. And there is a UK company now that's called Urban Airport, and air and port are two different words. There's a space between them. So they're doing some interesting things. One is they seem to be registering trademarks right and left. And I don't know how you can register as a trademark airport when it has a space in it. I don't know. It's kind of confusing. But anyway, what they want to do is they want to develop the world's smallest airport. That's what they call it, the world's smallest airport, something that's a one-stop shop for drones and eVTOL. So the company says, we provide innovative ground infrastructure as a service for future air mobility, an ultra-compact, rapidly deployable, multifunctional operations hub for manned and unmanned vehicles, providing aircraft command and control, charging and refueling, cargo and passenger loading, and other mission-specific facilities. So, David, this is infrastructure as a service.
Well, isn't an airport infrastructure as a service? I mean,
it's not in an airport. It's like a little mini airport.
Well, I agree, but You're building the infrastructure to support the vehicles. But, I mean, everything, a normal airport is infrastructure to support the vehicles.
Right.
They're really trying to present this as a novel concept, but it just really is a small size airport designed specifically for drones and eVTOL. It's interesting that retail is a important aspect of their solution. You know, you want to get the full use of this space. And when you look at the web, look at the article, there is a picture of this sort of ambiguous semi-circular vehicle airport that's hard to determine what's where. But, I mean, it is kind of interesting that they're not working to build the vehicles. They're just building the structure to support the vehicles.
Yeah, and if you go over to the Urban Airport website, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes, they do have a video there. In fact, we'll put the video right in the show notes. And that provides some more information. But these are, you know, small, little, self-contained, modular, low-impact units that are pre-manufactured. In their descriptions, they talk a lot about how green these things are in terms of the materials they use, the energy usage. They talk about these things being 100% off-grid, using solar panels and hydrogen for power. These are almost kind of like on-demand locations where people can congregate around them to enjoy services that the drones provide. So, I mean, it's an interesting concept. To me, David, it almost seems like a distant future state, you know, that might make sense. But it just feels like there's an awful lot of things that have to fall into place from a regulatory standpoint, primarily, before this can get off the ground.
Oh, yeah. There's the pun. But, you know, interestingly, though, Max, I mean, the way that it's sort of set up is it's sort of kind of like you have a Super Bowl coming to Tampa Bay. You could build a couple of these airports temporarily to support the influx of additional people into the area. I mean, so that's kind of an interesting concept that you could have it appear and then disappear. But like you said, I think it's a ways out, but at least it's another thing like the mailboxes we talked about a couple of weeks ago, you know,
right?
People thinking beyond, I mean, you have to start thinking about these things. There's no reason why you can't look ahead and, you know, and like we've talked about Boeing and Airbus trademarking and patenting everything. This is another one of those cases. People are thinking about it, and though it is kind of hard to imagine that it's, quote, completely off-grid, there's some lofty goals in this. I'm going to call them goals and not promises for what they're explaining, but that's not a bad thing. I mean, if you shoot for the stars and you miss, you hit the moon. So let easy old phrasing. So let's talk about our weekly FAA. FAA could improve communications on UTM programs. This was from UASvision.com. The GAO, or the Government Accountability Office, recommends that the FAA provide more UTM information to stakeholders. They haven't provided enough. We need more, huh?
Well, that's what the GAO says they found in talking to stakeholders. Who are stakeholders? That includes, well, just about everybody, manufacturers, service providers, everybody that's got an interest in urban air mobility and drone delivery and all of those things. But the GAO felt that those stakeholders want a better understanding of the timeline. Why do they want that? Well, integrating unmanned aircraft into the national airspace system is a very complex and, as we've seen, multi-step process, right? To get from where we were at the beginning to where we are now took a lot of actions, a lot of steps, a lot of studies, a lot of teams, a lot of this, a lot of that. But we still have a long ways to go. So it's a multi-step process, and stakeholders need to understand to have a better feel for the timeline for their own planning purposes. So if you're a commercial entity trying to play a role in, you know, in the unmanned aviation space, you want to be able to have a rough idea as to when things are going to happen that will allow you to ultimately conduct that kind of business activity.
And the Reauthorization Act of 2018 included a provision for the GAO to review infrastructure requirements for monitoring UAS at low altitudes, which they did. So what are they recommending? Provide stakeholders with additional information on the timing and substance of UTM testing and implementation efforts using FAA UTM's website or other appropriate means, and develop performance goals and measures for the UTM implementation plan. The problem I see with this, Max, is the FAA has been taking the attitude that we're going to provide the guidance, but you guys set up the timeframes in the planning, meaning the stakeholders. And now the GAO is saying you're not giving enough information to the stakeholders. So the FAA, I'm sure, is going to come back and say, that's not something we said we were going to do. We're setting the goals and you figure out the timeframes.
Well, as you mentioned, this GAO report is as a result of the Reauthorization Act that asked the GAO to take a look at this, which I think that's great. More eyes, different set of eyes, you know, on the overall process Reportedly, the DOT, the Department of Transportation, it was generally in favor of these recommendations from the GAO. But, you know, we have a new administration, and we have a new head of the DOT.
Wow, great segue. Congratulations, Mayor Pete, or Secretary Pete now. Pete Buttigieg is now Secretary of Transportation for the Department of Transportation, of course, the DOT, supervises the FAA. So we've got a new administration. The last 4 years would almost say were pro-drone, but it was kind of hard to tell. So let's see what we have with the new administration. Buttigieg has policies and has mentioned them in the past. What do you think they are, Max?
Well, as pointed out in the article, you know, as people are trying to guess at how or if Buttigieg will have a different policy outlook, it's noted that he has in the past embraced autonomous vehicle technology. And also, when he was mayor of South Bend, he drove initiatives that would create South Bend as a testbed for drones and wireless technology. So he's got that background. He's also a former intelligence officer in the Navy Reserve. And so I think intelligence officers are folks that rely heavily on new technologies as they come along. And so, you know, it would appear that Buttigieg would be of the persuasion that he would embrace new technologies.
My attitude towards this is all you had to do was look at the announcement that President Biden had won with that drone show to show you that maybe that was a good indication that it's going to be pro UAS. Maybe we can follow up, you know, have a dream of having Secretary Pete on the show to talk about the Department of Transportation's thoughts about UASs.
And maybe we should just mention, too, for our large audience outside the United States who may not be familiar with this guy, Pete Buttigieg was formerly the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and he was a contestant.
Contestant, yes.
He was a candidate for one of the candidates for the Democratic nomination for president. And he's, I guess, fondly in South Bend, always been referred to as Mayor Pete. And that seems to be carrying forward with his new position in the DOT. So that's why we're not being, you know, cute calling him Secretary Pete or anything like that. That's kind of how he's being referred to.
And in all fairness, the other important aspect is he's the first openly married LGBTQ individual that's held a cabinet position. So there's a lot to be said for Secretary Buttigieg. And besides, Pete is a lot easier to say than Buttigieg.
Yes.
But let's move on to NASA.gov. Fit to Fly aims to make future drones safe and reliable. So if drones are going to be flying all over, they need to be able to detect problems in flight. And we know NASA has been working on this for a while. In fact, we're only a week away from a certain vehicle landing on Mars, and they're going to have to set up a whole UTM traffic management for the drone to be flying around Mars.
Yeah. Of course, when you only have one aircraft in the air, it's a little easier. But
yeah, but that delay in transmission, boy, you got to watch out for that.
Yeah, that's a killer right there. But yeah, imagine a world where drones are flying and delivering and carrying people and doing all of these things. And the issue here is, shouldn't the drone be able to self-detect when it's got a problem and take the appropriate action, which might be land right now no matter what, or return to base, or whatever. So NASA has been working on this Fit to Fly program. Part of the idea is the drone would do a pre-flight self-check, and then in flight, if there are any problems that develop, that it would identify those problems and determine the immediate action to take. But another key piece of this is that the drone wouldn't just keep this information to itself or to itself and some operator or some home base or something, that the situation would be transmitted, made available to other drones, other drone operators in the area. So the example that they give is, let's say the drone is flying on its way to make a delivery and it loses signal. So is that because it's just flying through a dead zone or because of an equipment failure or a software failure on the drone itself? Well, let's say it determines that, no, this is just a temporary dead spot. So that drone then, in transmitting that information more broadly, would inform others that, okay, there's this dead spot here, let's avoid it. So that's just one example of kind of the benefit of having a drone that can detect its own problems and then transmitting that information so that others can benefit from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like when you use Waze, my favorite app, and there's a pothole and you tell somebody that there's a pothole there. It's a way of making it safe and for the other people flying in the airspace. So it was started in 2017, and then researchers have built prototype drones and conducted several experiments and tests. So it's an ongoing program, but it is one of those underlying things that NASA is doing that probably isn't getting a lot of notice, but is a very important aspect of what we're going to need to fly in the UAS.
And one more example of how many things, you know, we need to do or should be doing or could be doing to ensure that, you know, all of this ends up being safe.
And keep in mind that we have the safest airspace in the world, so we want to keep it that way. Because we don't want lawsuits. Kind of like the next one, which is the legal aspects of banning Chinese drone technology. This is lawfareblog.com. Last year, DJI donated at least 100 drones to more than 40 U.S. law enforcement and public safety departments. So was this a public service, or did DJI have a different or underlying motive?
Yeah, this article explores this in great depth. In fact, when I got halfway through this article, I started to run out of gas because it's pretty dense, because it really is a deep dive into this topic. But basically where it goes is starts with the fact that the U.S. government has issued warnings and even prohibitions against using Chinese drones. And some people, in seeing this these donations by DJI, are even calling for federal inquiries into this drone giveaway. Some people are wondering if DJI doesn't have any, you know, some ulterior motives here. The article looks at, well, what are some of the legal applications? And it starts out looking at it from an international standpoint. And even if, let's just say, a company is collecting data and using that data, perhaps even sending it on to their government, international law actually does not prohibit espionage. Why is that? It's because everybody does it. So it's not illegal. Espionage is not illegal on an international basis. And even if Chinese companies are sharing customer data with their governments, it's not clear that constitutes espionage or that it runs counter to any U.S. domestic laws. But that doesn't mean that the government is doing nothing with regard to this issue.
So the federal government is actually taking some actions about this. And we've talked about this over the last couple of months, which was the NDAA, or the National Defense Authorization Act of fiscal year 2020, put the DoD drone ban into law. The draft of the American Security Drone Act, or the ASDA, would bar any federal agency from acquiring Chinese drones or drones made with Chinese components, and would also codify the different policy prohibitions on using federal grant money to buy Chinese drones or components. In December of 2020, DJI was added to the Commerce Department's export control list, bars U.S. companies from exporting or re-exporting designated goods or technologies to DJI. Now, Max, you've been part of the Commerce Department's Export Control Act in your past.
What's that a little bit like?
Well, essentially, there's a list, and there's two lists. There's the Commerce Department list, and there's the Defense Department list, which is a little bit different. But essentially, it lists items that cannot be exported without first obtaining an export permit. And sometimes those are granted and sometimes they're not. But they can be used, and they have been used and continue to be used, to restrict components or items from being exported to specific countries. So if you don't want a particular technology to fall into the hands of a foreign government for a particular country because you're concerned that they will use those items or that technology in a way that's detrimental to the United States, then if it goes on the export control list, you can't export that. So it's a way to limit the outflow of certain technologies. So that's a big deal. You know, if you violate that and export something that's on that list without obtaining required approvals, the penalties are significant. So, you know, and as you said, there is a lot more. If you want to kind of get into some real depth of this issue, this article is actually a pretty good one. But one thing it raises is, okay, so, you know, how is DJI responding? What are they doing? And primarily, DJI is not taking the legal route. They're not filing lawsuits to make changes. But instead, they've been, you know, it's been a public relations campaign. They've been lobbying Congress. And as an example of that, Congress removed the ASDA, the American Security Drone Act, from the 2021 version of the National Defense Authorization Act. So DJI got a little reprieve there. But again, you know, it seems to come up a lot, well, this episode, but it's in general these days with the changing administration. It could be different. Things could be different. And right now it's just too soon to say if they will be. We'll see some different attitudes towards Chinese companies, drones in particular, but others as well.
But, you know, Max, the more things change, the more things stay the same. This Sunday, as we record this, unfortunately, Tom Brady again is in that football game. Different team, but he's still in that football team. But with the football and the Super Bowl comes no fly zones. And this one is pretty big, I have to admit.
It is pretty big. And it starts before the game day, starting the Friday before game day. You can't fly over the stadium. You can't fly within a two-mile radius of the Riverwalk downtown, which is where the Super Bowl NFL experience is being staged. But starting 1 hour before the game, the no-fly zone is enormous.
30-mile radius of the event. I mean, that's huge. They're not taking any chances, you know. And besides, you want to just don't. You know, if you're in Florida, just don't. I mean, do us all a favor and don't. We don't really want to talk about next Friday on next week's episode. We want to talk about some idiot that flew a drone over Tampa Bay. They have cannons in the stadium, folks, if you don't know that, all right? They have a pirate ship with cannons, so they will take out your drones. not to mention that the flyover is a B-2, a B-1, and a B-52, okay? You just let's not fly. But $30,000 is a lot of money for a violation, you know, so they're not messing around anymore. This is the way it's going to be in the future, and we just need to get used to it.
And this, of course, applies to manned aviation around that event, as well as unmanned. Either way, more information can be found at the FAA's website, and they've very conveniently and wisely set up a page that's at faa.gov/Super Bowl. So you can't forget that one. So if you want more information, you can take a look at that.
Well, Max, have you ever driven up the Pacific Coast Highway?
I did once, many, many, many years ago. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful.
It's amazing. It's gorgeous. I've driven from Los Angeles up to San Francisco and Monterey and stuff, and Big Sur. And that leads us to the video of the week. What happens when you've had dry spells and fires? There are mudslides. And California had a bad one and took out a major chunk of Route 1, Highway 1 in California at Big Sur. And drone footage of what Mother Nature can do when she's a bit pissed off.
And this was taken by the Monterey County Sheriff's Office. And probably everyone might have seen the still photo or the even video showing the big chunk of Highway 1 that's missing. And this drone video shows that as well. But it also expands on that a bit. It not only shows some of the damage and flooding in other sections of that road, but they also fly the drone up the hill from the highway where you can see just even more the extent of the damage. So it is Mother Nature versus man, and Mother Nature clearly won this one. I don't know how they're going to fix that. I mean, they're going to have to fix it, but I don't know how you repair something like that where I don't know how many, you know, million cubic yards of earth are gone.
Yeah, I mean, you build a bridge, I guess. I mean, there's a gorge there now that wasn't there 2 weeks ago, but it's not like Route 1 is not a minor road, you know? I mean, it's agreed it's only a two-lane road. It's not a super highway. They're all inland, but, you know, it's a major, just for tourism alone, it's a major throughway for California. So California's taken a lot of hits recently, and this is just one more of them, and they're all sort of rolling together. So, but interesting video of the week, interesting use of videos, you know, and done by professionals, and it'll be interesting if they start using them for the surveying, etc., you know, the implications of using drones for this, because it's kind of an inaccessible place. So
yeah, it is. All right. Well, we want to thank you for listening. This has been episode 361 of the UAV Digest. You can find us, of course, at the uavdigest.com. We'll have links to all the articles we talk about, the video, all that stuff you can find there if you want to learn more. So we invite you to check us out at the uavdigest.com.
And, of course, you can join our Slack listener team by sending us an email to by sending us an email to...
What show am I on right now?
Feedback@theuavdigest.com. And you can find both Max and I on LinkedIn. You can find us on Twitter, on Facebook. But most of all, definitely join the conversation on Slack, because that's where we want you to be. And I guess with that, I'm going to say, go Kansas City. This is David in Fort Washington.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.